Yep. Oh,
yeah. All right, why don't we get this started? So, hey, folks, sit back, relax, get your favorite libation, your favorite snack. The Geocaching Podcast is coming at you right about now.
You want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 492, recorded live on April 5th, 2017. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat with
Taz427 and
Info Pirate.
You can join our chat room. She has one job. You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. And also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by our good patrons of the Geocaching Podcast. To become a contributing factor for the show, please simply click on our PayPal or Patreon logos on our webpage to help keep our podcast going. From all of us at the Geocaching Podcast, we thank you. Well, the weather is definitely, I'll talk for the Northern Hemisphere, Sarah will talk for the Southern. The Northern Hemisphere is going nuts. Lots of weird weather going on. There's a major snowstorm predicted to go through Michigan, where they're talking like another foot of snow right in the mid-state of the Lower Peninsula. And it's just been raining cats and dogs here. So there's been tornadoes and all sorts of things going on. So just be careful out there when you're geocaching, that there is just, it's just crazy out there. And the weather can just sneak up on you.
Yeah, my buddies down in Houston got a good drenching last week as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And Sarah, in New Zealand, you've just got the tail end of Cyclone Debbie, huh?
Yeah, but Australia got hammered with it last week. I mean, when I spoke to you last Thursday, good chunks of it were underwater. We've got a drenching working its way down the country today and probably into tomorrow. We had probably about an inch of rain in 2 hours last night.
And wow.
It's still raining now.
Right.
And some poor souls have been evacuated, and there's a town up further north called Edgecombe, which is being in Hawke's Bay, where they're having to evacuate quite a large number of people because the stop bank's going.
Wow, that's something. Now,
I'll bring that up later on and see how they're doing.
Okay, sounds good. I'm curious, when they talk about hurricanes, they talk about the category and the strength of a particular hurricane. Do they do that with cyclones?
They do, but it depends on quite what they do. What they tend to do for us, because we tend not to get hurricanes, thank God. That's Australia's pet specialty in the islands. But they usually give a sort of estimated peak wind speed and sort of gusts in kilometers per hour.
Okay.
Usually at the top of Mount Kaukau, which I can actually see from my house. And there's a couple of weather stations around Wellington. They just say what the peak gusts are. And, well, today they closed the suspended all flights out of Wellington Airport for a few hours till the rains died down to something manageable.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's interesting. All right, sounds good, because literally hurricane season for the states are about to start up in another couple of weeks, so it's all over again. Mm-hmm. Interesting things. A couple of quick park and grabs this week. One of the things that I noticed, I went on to geocaching.com's website and just brought up the map around where I'm at. And if you look at the circle around about a 10-15 mile radius, there's nothing of geocaches for me to find. People haven't been placing them like they used to. So I've got a dead zone where I can't just say, you know what, I'm just going to go pick up a geocache without having to drive 15-20 miles to go start hitting the areas that I haven't hit as much. So it's one of those things that I'm going to have to see if I can get the ball rolling and start putting out some geocaches in the hopes that that's going to get other geocachers to want to go out and put more geocaches, because I haven't seen new ones in it's quite honestly shy of a few of them. I haven't seen them in a couple of years where people were before. They were out every day practically. So hoping that picks up with stuff like that. Taz, how about yourself?
Well, I haven't quite cleared out my new area
yet. Oh, you've got brand new. You got some time yet.
It's all right for some.
but being somewhat out in the sticks for Sacramento area, yeah, I still have to travel a lot, or I will completely wipe out my area very quickly. But as far as last weekend, I was on the honey-do list job, so my wife was cracking the whip, but she's... She's out of town next weekend, so maybe, just maybe, I'll get a break from the honey-do list and get some caches.
There you go. Sarah, how about yourself?
Well, I've got a fair few in my still in my immediate area, but most of them are puzzles that I just haven't got my brain around solving, or they're way up on the hills, which is great, but you can't just sort of nip out and grab one out after work.
Mm-hmm.
I did manage to escape whilst the lads were having underwater hockey at the weekend. They came sixth out of ten. So, yeah. And so I explored a track that's sort of nearish there called the Rata Loop, which has got a load of really cool caches on them, just sort of creative containers. I don't want to say too much because it would spoil for people. But they're not easy to find.
Right.
But I picked up 5 unfound ones on that. And there's, just as usual, left one DNF to come back for next time.
Right.
Because my brain had just gone by that point.
Yeah.
And after everybody had bagged it, I decided I would give the official app a try. Yes, it loads fine. Yes, it's quick. Yes, it's intuitive. But I'm now back on CGO because I couldn't work out how on earth to get the hints to come up. And CGO just seemed, because I was running the two in parallel, CGO just seemed to refresh much, much faster if you were trying to count down to distances offline. And it could just be familiarity that I know how it works, so I could make it work.
Right.
And doing a pretty big, I'm hoping to do a big day of caching on Saturday, going over to the Wairarapa with a friend of mine to see how many we can find.
Right.
And the boys are going to be off around New Plymouth doing a 6-hour adventure race, which is far too energetic for me to think about.
With orienteering, yeah.
Yeah. Orienteering, mountain biking. They've been told to bring life jackets and inner tubes because they're going to be doing a bit of tubing down the river as well.
Oh, my.
So it's a multi-sport thing.
Oh, my. Hey, Sarah, do me a favor. Can you move your mic just a little bit out from your mouth?
Sure, sorry.
It's a little bit of popping. Awesome.
Is
good
that
stuff.
Any better?
That is much better. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're...
The kitten hasn't adapted to daylight saving time. I got my nose licked at 5:45 this morning to be woken up.
They will do that. It's amazing how a couple of pounds of fur will go through and just drive you crazy.
Yep, yeah, frequently.
Absolutely. Yeah, matter of fact, they will. They'll drive you nuts. It's cool stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Let's move on to the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community. And what's coming up this week on Geo Gearheads is episode 275, Pocket Query 2s. Chris of the Northwest, a.k.a. the Bad Cop, and Daryl W4 take another look at the old workhorse of the geocaching.com premium feature known as Pocket Queries. So I'm sure they'll get into all the wonderful technical aspects effects and go over that. If you would, please, please, please consider becoming a patron of our show. It does cost money to do our podcast, and we can use every bit of what we can. If you go to geocachingpodcast.com and go either to our PayPal or our Patreon logos, click on each of those. They'll give you all the information you need. If you can throw a couple of bucks at us each month, we would greatly, greatly appreciate it. All the money goes to the shows, and it pays for everything like the hosting and all the other things that go on with the podcast itself. And we, for the folks that are doing that, thank you so much. We greatly appreciate it. And if you've been considering it, go ahead and jump right on that horse and go over to those websites and sign yourself up. Again, we greatly, greatly do appreciate it. Chad, do you got the show notes up in front of you? You want to do the mailbag?
Sure. So from the GCPC mailbag, now that geocaching has announced the ape cache will be reactivated at the 2017 Going Ape event, you have your work cut out for you. You'll have to start the drum beat, lead the band, and any other metaphor you can think of to boost the Willitons for the event to giga status.
Ooh, yeah.
Just think, the historic reactivation of the ape cache along with the Western Hemisphere's first giga event will simply be epic. Many cachers will be able to get a twofer on just one iconic trip. See what I just did there?
Uh-huh. We got it.
So call your contacts at geocaching.com, find out what it takes to attend giga status, and get it started. Sign up yourselves, sign up your friends, and get everybody you know and everybody they know to sign up. Even if they don't think they can make it, North America needs this to happen. Keep up the good work, Data Wrangler.
Well, thank you, Data Wrangler.
So, yeah, I've actually took a look. Google Maps says 12 hours and 30 minutes to drive up there from my house.
Oh, really?
So I may just be driving up there. But speaking of eight caches,
yes.
Congratulations to GBs and some of my other fellow Sacramento area cachers who went down and did the ape cache this past weekend.
Did they really? Now, they did. When you say down, are you talking Brazil?
Down to Brazil.
Oh, wow. Yes. Way to go. Congrats.
Yeah.
That is awesome. That is on my bucket list. I want to do that. It's just, you know, the odds of actually doing it.
Well, it's on my sort of fantasy list at some point.
There you go.
But, hey, it's unlikely to happen.
Yeah.
If this gets to giga status, I'm just going to have to make the drive.
Yes, I agree.
I don't have the annual leave, unfortunately, but it's bloody tempting.
Yeah.
If I had a more annual leave and a couple of $1,000 budget, I'd be seriously tempted.
Well, like myself, Sarah, you just have to by day be an honest working woman, by night be a cat burglar, and just kind of go out and do your thing to go for and find the funds. I'm just saying, unofficially.
Well, don't think anybody would want one of my kidneys, which was what we would take me to get over there.
Kidney, cat, whatever I can donate, it's fine. That's great.
You could sell those geocoins.
Oh, no. That's going into the official Head Hard Hat Museum some year where you know,
I'm going to be buried with those.
I'm going to get buried with them, and my kids are going to set up a gift shop right next to it and just go for it. There will be a geocache.
There's probably quite a bit of scrap value in there in those cabinets behind me, especially from a very safe distance.
No.
No. So, yeah, anyways, good stuff. Let's move on to what we have tonight. I noticed in the geocaching blog where they were talking about, and I actually used some of this stuff from the geocaching blog, so thank you guys for putting this out. They were talking about how six helpful hints for creating your video for the GIF 2017. And I thought it would be good for us to kind of take it a little bit further than just the six hints that they have there, because there's a lot more involved than just getting your smartphone on and taking some video and try to make a good quality GIF video. And we actually have, and I'll have in the show notes, not only a link to the six helpful hints that they have for the geocaching blog, we also will have a link to YouTube for the Geocaching International Film Festival 2016 YouTube video that's out there. It's about an hour long. And it has the winners from last year. And I actually went through that today. A lot of really good stuff. I was very happy to see Colin French's version.
Oh, yeah.
Was awesome. I mean, everybody had a good set of creativity, and they were thought out, and they were very nicely done. So it would be important for anybody, if they're considering to put a video in, to do it. Please get your entries in for it, and then we'll give some helpful hints tonight on how you can do that. I've got a little bit of experience with YouTube, and Chad's watched the videos. So and Sarah, how are you on the GIFs? Have you watched any of those before?
I've seen the last two. First of all, I'd like to say congratulations and go for it, and I'll cheer for anybody who gets off the backside and puts a video in.
There you go.
Yeah, so it's not an easy task. So go for it and well done.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I've watched the last two episodes, and I thought they were brilliant.
Yeah, very nicely done. Mm-hmm. And there was from several different countries, which they actually had in there so I could read what they were saying. So that was good to have the captioning. That was nice. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, good stuff. This is right out of the blog that we're going to talk about tonight. Now, one of the things that you want to consider about this, and I'll just read this what the blog actually said for this. It says, if you're a filmmaker, a geocacher, or something in between, the GIF 2017 is your chance to have your geocaching film viewed by thousands of people on movie screens all around the world. Now, the thing is, you have to have your submission in by August 1st. 2017 to get into the possibility for voting. So you now, and you're going, well, it's April. I'm telling you, if you're going to do a quality video, you got to start now if you haven't already started. It doesn't give you much time, especially when life gets into things.
Yep.
There's a lot of stuff that you need to do. And again, tonight we're going to kind of go over some of the stuff that that kind of give you an idea why you should start now.
You may plan out a weekend,
yes,
and suddenly have a belt of rain come through that just washes out that,
exactly,
that entire weekend for you.
Exactly. There's a lot of things that can go on, especially if you have multiple people that are in your filming. So lots of things can go on. Before you start filming, check out these tips all GIF filmmakers should follow. And the number one thing that they have on here, and I guess, guys, why don't we just do round robin? I'll do the first one, and then we'll move on to each of us can do one. Number one, know the rules for submission. And they literally put this in here. Seriously, read the rules. In the past, we've had to reject films that, and they give a short list here. Keep in mind your films must be less than 4 minutes. No longer than 4 minutes. If they are, they're immediately disqualified. So make sure your films are not, but it's 4 minutes and 5 seconds. No. Make sure it stops at, you know, 3 and 59. I'm just saying. Don't go any further. Show footage of a geocache that they either don't have permission to spoil or doesn't follow all the basic requirements for hiding a geocache. We don't want to show stuff that's going to make people misinterpret what geocaching is or how to geocache. Do the stuff that's in there that follow under the requirements for geocaching. If you receive permission to show an active geocache, make a note of that in the film submission form. Guess what? If you show a really, really cool gadget cache that was just so awesome you can't believe it and you want to video it, make sure you have permission of the owner to do that. Not only just because of copyright, because it's property of somebody else, you don't want to get tangled and tick off the owner either. So be very careful when it comes to things like that. Include footage that is not family friendly. PG, guys, PG. PG-13, I can't even think of what it is that would follow that, but keep it PG. So another things like... they mean family, meaning family friendly, is no nudity, sexually explicit, or suggestive content.
I think just we had one of those that was somewhat suggestive last year.
Yeah,
yeah, I saw that. Good. Great.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Keep it clean. Or suggestive content, profanity, firearms, or other weapons, racist, harassing, or otherwise offensive content, or content that would be inappropriate for children, such as violent or frightening content. Several times in the past, we've had to disqualify film entries for scenes that were too frightening for younger kids.
Okay. I guess mine's out with the firearms.
All right. Well,
come on, we're just politically incorrect anyway.
So I know.
Well out for that.
Yeah, so just keep it neat, keep it clean, keep it fun, and you're safe. Don't use, and this is important because a lot of people go, but it's on this. No. Use footage, music, photos that you don't have rights to. There's a lot of people that put things out, like the Geocaching Podcast, and I mean, the type of media that's out there. We have permission because we own the content. If you go and use said stuff, that goes against copyright infringement. Don't do that. That is bad.
Don't put Beyonce's
no.
in your video.
No.
It might be a catchy tune, but
it's not what you have, and there are tons of places where you get free content. So
I was going to use Gangnam Style and go geocaching style. That would have been brilliant, but hey, I don't want the copyright lawyers.
Exactly. And actually, YouTube has scrubbers. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, but I had a video I made. It was a GeoSnippets, and it was made back in 2008. I used, and this is back when I did not know nothing. I used about 5 seconds of AC/DC. I think it was Back in Black that I just used the, wasn't even the words. It was just some of the music in the background. 4 years later, I get a notice saying cease and desist. You have to change this. This has to be updated and taken care of. 4 seconds. So don't do it. Don't use copyrighted material because they won't let you. YouTube will catch it for one. And plus it's against the law. It's just don't do it.
Yeah. Don't even hum it because, you know, they have, I have seen it where they have scrub videos and stuff where people have literally hummed the music.
Yes. Copyright means they own it.
Copyright law is also very different in different countries. So something might be absolutely fine in yours, but not somewhere else.
Exactly.
And from memory, copyright kicks in the country of whatever it is originates. But I know enough about copyright to get seriously scared. So if in doubt, don't.
Don't do it. The other thing is there are some free and what they call fair use music resources, the ones that you want to look up and you want to write this down. It's called Free Play Music. This is the type of things that you want to Google. Vimeo Music Store, where you can choose the Creative Commons free area, is all free music that are in there. GarageBand has a Mac app where you can make your own music if you want to do that. There's another thing called, and that's used for iOS. There is another app that you can use for making music called LMMS. It's a PC app. It's basically Linux Multimedia Studio, which is very much like GarageBand, which is another app where you can make your own music. The stuff that I use for GeoSnippets, all the transition music that I use for that, I used GarageBand and wrote that myself. So I can't have somebody come back and say, you're using my music. I wrote it. And it takes, you know, it'll take you a day to understand the stuff that goes in. And a lot of them, they have helpful riffs that you can put together really easy to come up with combinations that in whatever style that you want. It's not all that difficult. So something to consider is making your own background music. Very, very cool. Chad, why don't you go ahead and do the second part?
Number two, tell a story that only you can tell. There's nothing wrong with your film being about a geocaching love story. a race to the FTF, or a geocaching montage. But be aware that we've seen those themes a lot in the past, which they're great themes, but, you know, it's been done. Mm-hmm. After watching the finalist films from previous years, where do you find the art in geocaching? How do you make this game your own? And don't forget that you can film, your film can be fiction or it can be a documentary style. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's try to make these things unique and creative. And, you might want to go ahead and take a look at what's been done in the past, because those probably aren't going to win.
Right. And like I said, I've got the, we'll have a link in the show notes of last year's winners. It's about an hour altogether. It's literally a 1 hour video that you can go through and watch all of them. And there's a lot of stuff. I think the ones.
And that, they can spur ideas as
yes.
well. You'll have to copy them, but they can
yes.
spur ideas and give you plenty of content to think about.
Yeah, there's a lot of the ones in there that were very, very creative. Things that that catch your eye that they would do that were almost slapstick. I mean, there was just a lot of stuff in there that just made you enjoy it. You know, somebody having a little small geocaching pouch and then be able to pull out a full-size fishing rod out of it. You know, things like that. Little creative things to just catch people's eyes and enjoy the story. Being creative, don't stop with that. Be as creative as you can with your imagination, and that will help your storytelling a lot. Sarah, you want to do number three?
Okay. Make it global. Geocaching is an international game, and so is every GIFF audience. Try to show an element of the geocaching experience that people in different corners of the world can connect with. Try to find a balance between a film that's personal to you and one that others can relate to.
Absolutely.
What I'd add is, just think about it. I mean, I can witter on about tracks around Wellington, and an audience of about three people might know what I'm on about, but it won't necessarily mean anything to the rest of New Zealand, let alone the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'd also add into that is sort of be aware that people watching might not have your language as their first language. So visual is great because, I mean, that links on to the next topic.
Yeah.
But it means that people who's, if it's in English, people for whom English isn't their first language, can still follow along, can still get the point of your little story.
Yep, absolutely. And it's so important for things like that, because geocaching has so many common denominators. It doesn't matter what language you have. They understand it in whatever you go through. So if you can visually demonstrate that, that makes it relatable. And that's the key thing. And they go, oh, we know what that is. So that's absolutely right. Yeah, good stuff. Number four, make it visual, like Sarah said. Show, don't tell. Film is visual medium. You have all the audience hanging on to tenor hooks. Okay, I'm not exactly sure what that is. By keeping the voiceover and dialogue short and sweet, this GIFF 2015 finalist film was able to do a lot with no dialogue at all. There were several that were in the finalists that had no talking whatsoever, and yet it was a very cool way that that you were perfectly able to understand what they were trying to accomplish. So keep it visual. It's very important for stuff like that.
Tenor hooks are like a clove spin.
Ah, okay. So keep them hooked.
But it's not
stretching out fabric.
It's not used in the term's not used in the Midwest. So.
And I was going to say it's not my cup of tea, as it were.
Well, that's a classic example of using a word that won't be grabbed by everybody.
Yes.
Yep.
That's exactly it. Good point. All right, Mr. Chad, number five.
Less is more. Just because you can submit up to 4 minutes of video doesn't necessarily mean that you should, especially if you're as bad of a video maker as myself. Ask yourself, what is the simplest way I can tell this story? Then add more if you can't resist. This will help you focus on what is truly important and keep your audience engaged. The 2015 gift finalist travel bug story tells a sweet and simple story in under 2 minutes.
Oh, wow. Awesome. Nice stuff.
So yeah, definitely you don't want something that winds up being unnecessarily drawn out like a bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
Or a Peter Jackson epic.
Yes. There you go. 3 hours is a perfectly acceptable length of film for parts 1, 2, or 3. Just saying. But yes.
Not each of them.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times people are going to get it. You don't have to exactly explain everything when you're trying to go through something to get your point across. A lot of times people want to use association, and that's what actually makes more familiar to them if they have to connect some of the dots together. So you don't have to explain step 1, step 2, step 3, step 4, step 5, step 6. Give an overview and do it that way. People will grab onto it, believe me, and that gives them to use their imagination more to understand what you're trying to get across. So, excellent stuff. All right, Sarah, you want to do number 6?
Sure, last but not least, by any means, focus on quality. We understand if geocaching comes before filmmaking on your hobby list. We're not looking for Hollywood here. And anybody who watches the podcast would know that. We are, however, looking for videos that will look and sound good on the big screen. As much as you may love your GoPro, simply wearing it around while you go geocaching usually doesn't make for the best footage. If you can, use a tripod and an external mic. If you can't, have your actors speak close to your on-camera mic and use a natural tripod like a tree limb or your friend's shoulder. The 2015 finalist, The Future of Geocaching, is a great example. And for more technical tips, check out Vimeo's Video School.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, that's what came in. Again, we want to thank the geocaching blog for providing that in their post. And I think that gives you a good basic understanding of what you need. But I think a lot of times if somebody wants to do a video that hasn't done it before, they might need just a little bit more information. So I ended up asking the guys to go out and just add to some tips from our video experience, what goes on. Now, Chad said he's not that good of a videographer. I say he's fine when he goes out and does stuff. Actually, I'm kind of curious from Sarah to see what kind of stuff that she would end up doing, too.
You'd probably get lots of shots of tops of heads or feet.
Well, there you go. You know, it's a learning process. It really is. Yeah. So I thought we would come up with some helpful tips for you fine folks out there on what you would want to consider for if you're going to make a GIF or just to start documenting and making your own YouTube videos. Because there's a lot of people out there. When I started back in 2008, there were about 4 people out there. There was less than 1,000 videos dealing with geocaching when I started. And you go out now and there's hundreds of thousands of videos that people have done over time, and it has grown into a very, very cool thing. And one of the things that people have told me over the years, time and time again, to keep doing videos because they live vicariously through how other geocachers geocache. They may not be able to get out all the time or venture into a particular country or place to go geocaching. And when people make these videos, they get to go and experience it. And it's so important. So, all right.
I'd add that the Umaru event in Labor Weekend, which we're hoping it'll get to mega status. Plug, plug, plug. Okay, Nelly. They've done a few cool little mini videos just for sort of what's a good puzzle cache, mm-hmm. and they're on their page. And I should imagine a lot of other events that are hoping for big things will do just little snippets of, doesn't have to cover everything.
No.
Just one or two points.
First video I ever did for GeoSnippets videos was on a bison tube. Okay, so you do a few minutes on a bison tube, you explain what it is, and when I did that in 2008, I immediately got responses back from people saying, do more videos. I mean, it's not rocket science. You could pick a subject and go out and do, and a lot of people go out and they show their adventures of how they do it. This is the kind of stuff you can use in your stories when you want to go out and make something for GIF. So let's go over some of the equipment things that you want to consider. The first thing that I highly recommend, and again, I get a lot of this out of my GeoSnippets days, proper attire when you're going to spend a day or a couple of days going out geocaching is absolutely essential. You, like Sarah said earlier, you don't know if you're going to get that deluge of rain unexpectedly, or the wind's going to pick up, or different type of things that go on, hot, cold, whatever happens. Make sure you have the proper attire getting to where you're going to do your video shoot, when you're at your video shoot, and while you're doing your video shoot. Be prepared for everything, because all it takes is a windy day all of a sudden that can totally destroy your audio unless you're prepared for it, that kind of thing. Just be sure what you are wearing and what you're set up for, your not only just for you, but your equipment itself.
Yeah. I was going to say hypothermia when you're trying to on a beach trying to film something running around in a bikini would probably not be a good look.
No. And the other thing is, too, is you don't want to be out there with your camcorder and suddenly having a rainstorm, and suddenly you have this nice paperweight that no longer functions. I've known many a geocacher that's gone out with their single shot, you know, cameras, and getting caught in a rainstorm or something like that, and not being prepared, and suddenly that camera's not working so good anymore.
Oh yeah,
yeah. You got to be careful, and that's where you learn things like for your equipment, like dry bags. Are very important. They are huge. Yep. Basically, they're just a rubber bag that you can take your stuff when, if something comes up, you open it up, you unzip it, you throw your stuff in, you zip it back up, and it'll at least protect it from the elements when they happen, because they will.
And even when I go out, when it's a 100% chance, yes, that it's a sunny day and no rain,
yes,
I will at least bring a... doesn't necessarily need to be a dry bag, but a bag that I can stick my camera equipment in.
Ziplocs are awesome.
You know, I occasionally I go out there with my DSLR.
Yep.
And I don't want that baby to get wet.
No.
And so, you know, as long as you can get it covered up and stuff and out of the rain, you're probably pretty good.
Yeah. Same thing with yourself. Having protection from the sun. And, you know, going that way, making sure you're hydrated, all those kind of common sense things that you just don't realize, because hours can go by really quick when you're out at a shoot. You're out trying, yeah, to accomplish things. The next thing you know, why is my skin red? You know, that kind of thing. You got to really be prepared.
A lot of the same kinds of common sense that you use when, yeah, geocaching.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And even if you're shooting an action adventure, snip 4 minutes, there's, yes, an awful lot of standing around to get those four, to get what you need to boil down to that.
Okay, just to give you a rough idea, when I do a geo snippet where I'm doing, you know, I've got it planned out, I know what I want to do, I can easily burn 4 to 5 hours for an 8-minute video. So it happens, because things don't happen the way you want if you're trying to shoot sometimes, and it takes some time and patience to get it. So yeah, be prepared, and don't think it, like Sarah said, if you're doing a 4-minute video, you're going to do a lot more than 4 minutes of video to do it.
Yep.
Video cameras, very, very important, having the right ones. Now you go, well, I got my smartphone. Sure. Smartphones work fine. If you look at Joshua, the geocaching vlogger, he's been using an iPhone forever. He's had other equipment as well, but iPhone is his go-to device. Make sure if you are using a smartphone or a digital camera that the anti-shake option is on, because there is nothing worse watching a video where you're going like this. It's you want to have it as smooth, and I actually recommend, if you're going to use a digital camera, because smartphones don't, you can use different things for smartphones, but a tripod is, yes, absolutely essential. Now, there are different ways you can kind of mimic a tripod. There are gorilla pods that you can clamp onto a branch that the camera hooks onto. There are what they kind of refer to as sandbags that are little pouches that you can do to stand your smartphone in. Don't have somebody hold the camera as much as possible. Make sure it sets on something stable when you do your video. It's a huge difference.
And these little digital cameras that you have today, that most of them do have a screw hole in the bottom for
right.
for a tripod.
For a shoe,
you can get a cheap $20 tripod from Amazon that will hold it. I mean, you wouldn't want large, heavy equipment on it. The small equipment, it works perfectly fine for that.
Yeah.
You know, and also they tend to be extremely lightweight to toss in your backpack.
Yeah, you can fold them down to almost nothing and do just that. They're literally that small. Except, highly recommend, don't have somebody hold it going, well, it looks steady. Believe me, when you get that put up on the screen, you can tell. Big difference.
Yeah, trust me, every time I hand my camera to someone to take a picture of the family and stuff, it always comes out like crud.
Yeah.
It's like, do you not know how to frame a picture?
Yes, exactly.
And, I consider myself an amateur photographer, but most people who snap pictures, they just snap pictures.
Yeah. It's like, click, got it. No. Yeah. Not if you're trying to do something with quality. And one of the things, speaking about going back and forth with the camera on the tripod, there are many, many times when you're shooting between sets of what you're trying to accomplish, you are constantly setting up the people or yourself or whatever you're doing on a certain spot, going back to your camera, making sure that everybody's where it's supposed to be and framed in, going back to where the spot is, do your bit and repeat. If you can have somebody at the camera being able to control that part of it that knows how to frame, that is key. That will help you out in a lot of stuff. Because like Sarah said, you don't want to have pictures of, half of it with just showing the tops of people's heads or their feet or what have you. The guy to the left is missing or half there. It's very important to do that. And you do it a lot. And actually, that's where a lot of time goes, is going in between the sets of what you're trying to film.
And there's some pretty nifty Bluetooth releases. They call them releases that, releases typically for a single shot, but you can use them to turn on the recording as well.
Yeah.
And so those would be pretty handy to have if you don't have that person there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's just a little button you keep in your hand. There's nothing to it.
And be as careful, because odds are you don't want to have to go back and reshoot one essential scene.
Oh, that is the worst.
Oh, yeah.
You drive an hour and a half to get to a particular scenic spot, everything's set up, and it's not like you can suddenly shoot it in the backyard to make it up. It's really, that's why you make sure things are you get everything.
I've got a story from when Simon, who's now my eldest, who's now 21, was about 2 or 3. He went and stayed with my parents while we were away somewhere for a week. And they took him out for a little walk, to walk along a country path down to a bridge and over the railway. And we headed down there, and there was somebody set up with camera, tripod, mics, the gear to record this something or other train coming through along the line under the bridge. So this poor enthusiast had everything going, and his background sound had excited toddler going, train, 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 train.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. That's also...
Apparently, his comment was, there'll be another one next week.
Ow. And this is another reason why you set up more than one mic when you do things. I'm just saying. Speaking of audio, excellent transition into it. There are, once you get your video done, the audio, I would have to say, in most videos that I've seen in YouTube, nothing will kill a video. You can have the most spectacular shots in video on YouTube. If your audio sucks, it kills everything.
click next video.
Yeah, it's that bad. And there are so many different ways that that could happen. And I've done it myself in videos where people go, hey, Andy, you know what? The music was just a little bit too loud in the background while you're talking. Things like that. And I'm like, well, why is that bothering you? Well, I have a hearing problem. And I can only hear certain things with that. Could you like either not have the music playing while you're talking or have it turned down lower? Because so you hear from people where they have different issues that you may not have even thought about with the audio, let alone other things like wind. Or if when you go to film, one of the best advice that I can give, when you go to film video, do not use zoom. The zoom is your feet on how close you want to get to the object of which you're videoing. There is nothing worse than having one or two people that look like they're right in front of the camera going, and now this is what I'm going to do, and then this is it. And you can't hear them because they're actually farther away than the zoom, and the mic is not strong enough to pick up the audio of what they're saying. Will drive people insane.
Very good.
So, yeah. Always never use zoom on a camera. Your feet are the zoom. Be that close.
Unless
when they
could lip sync.
Or something.
Do a voiceover.
Something. And that, even then, that's other stuff in post that you've got to do all that to go through. And we'll go over that. So what you want to do when you're doing it, if you can afford, and they're not expensive, they're not cheap, depending on what you want to call expensive. If you can get a lapel mic on each of the individuals, there are little packs that you can buy. They're probably about $80 for the sender and the receiver for those that make a huge difference. Then you can actually be back because things plug into the camera or in the recorder that you're recording your audio from, and then they're talking into a mic. Huge difference in audio with stuff like that. If you can't afford lapel mics, then there are other things that you can use. There's a boom mic that you can use. If you just got the smartphone, just be as close to them as you can. If it's a windy day, don't do it. You're never going to get the wind sound out of it. You're just going to have to wait for the wind to die down for stuff like that. The nice stuff, one of the things that I use all the time, and I'm recording the show right now on this, is a Zoom mic. Awesome stuff. You can get a Zoom mic for about $100 that you can, again, hook a lapel mic to and have them hold the Zoom mic or the Zoom recorder and record that way. Anything to do to get the sound quality of whoever's talking the best is going to save you a lot of grief with your video. Because then you don't have to do voiceovers. It's already, you can sync it very easily when you're doing post for this. Some of the audio that you want to look for that are free or not so expensive, because you can get really expensive with this stuff. For audio for PC, one of the things that I've been using for years is called AVS for You. And again, that's AVS for You with the number 4. It's a free set of software. If you want to buy the entire package of all their audio and visual stuff, I think it's $60. And I've been using it for years for editing for audio. Awesome thing to do. You can use the free stuff that way. Audacity makes it for iOS and for PC, where you can cut snippets out of the audio and put it in place with the video to put it over it. GarageBand works very nicely out of iOS, where you can do stuff for that as well for video or audio editing. The idea is, the better quality, even though if you're recording on a device and you're getting the quality of the audio that way, it doesn't matter what picks up in the initial video that you're doing, because you can take the snippets of the audio and put it over the audio that's in the video and make it better that way, if that makes sense. Any comments with that, guys?
Not a huge amount. You've got far more experience than I have on it.
I've been doing editing for the past 10 years now.
Yeah.
But that's the stuff that I've run across when you go out and do stuff like this. Okay, so let's go with after, you know, that's just the stuff to make the stuff better is the things that we're going to, making sure that you have the best possible video that you can get and the best possible audio that you can get. How about actually creating your YouTube video yourself? There are several free and low-cost applications on PC and iOS that you can use for taking your video digitally, putting it on your computer, and then putting them in these applications and start cut and pasting things together. So that's there's some stuff that you can use. For example, on PC, you can still get and download. I've probably the first 50 geo snippets I did with Movie Maker from Microsoft. It wasn't the most flamboyant. It wasn't all the best bells and whistles. But if all you're doing is cutting snippets out of your film and putting them and splicing them together in order the way that you want them, it's awesome for things like that. Plus, there's some subtle effects that you can put into it as well to make it that much more creative.
I believe it has some free background.
Yeah.
Or free music, free use music. Built in that you can put in there for the background as well.
Absolutely, and it's also key. I'm sorry, Sarah.
I'd also say I was going to pick up on your comment of subtle effects.
Yeah.
If in doubt, less is more.
Yes.
I'm sort of going back to when a lot of my friends were getting married, sort of mid to late 80s, and sort of all the hideous wedding photograph effects that sort of started to appear in the album.
Oh yeah, that was supposed to be cool.
Yeah, just sort of keep it. If you're going to do things like that, keep it subtle.
Yeah.
It's very easy to overuse.
Yeah, one fade in at the beginning, one fade out at the end, not a transition for every scene.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You know, I'll give you one of the best things that you can do. There's been many times when I've done an interview where I've had two or three cameras that are stationary as you're doing the interview, so you can have different views of the same conversation, which is awesome because you're not looking at the same thing through the whole thing. You get different views of them by simply splicing those pieces in. But one of the best things that you can do that is subtle is there's a thing called Zoom where you can have an effect, and all it does is it slowly just kind of zooms into the characters just a little bit. It's not like you suddenly shoot up to somebody's nose. You just slowly zoom in a little bit till you get it where it's framed, just those two, and then maybe slowly zoom back out. It makes it more enjoyable because you're not just watching the same thing. It just gives just enough that you don't even notice it's happening. Those are the subtleties that you want to do with that. So just another hint for stuff that goes in this. Some of the other things that you can use for applications, I use Corel Video Studio. I think I'm up to version 8. A little bit more expensive. I think an upgrade is usually about $80, give or take, over time. So I've been using those all the time. That is my go-to video editing on a PC. Tons of things you can do with it, lots of things editing-wise that you can do to it, and you can be as creative or not creative as you want. I'm not saying for just the GIF that this wouldn't be something you would get just for the GIF unless you've got the dough to do it. There's a little bit of learning curve involved, but once you get it, it's awesome for video editing, something you want to do. For iOS, if you want to go for free or kind of free, iMovie is what you want to use for that. There's another one I saw called Viva Videos that is no cost that works on iOS. And, of course, if you want to be the absolute pro or if you want to do Independence Day, then you use Final Cut Pro. And then that can cost you some major bucks. But if you got the money and you got the power and you've got the iMac, Final Cut Pro, you're literally using the same thing the big boys use when it comes to video editing. So that's some of the applications you can use for something like that. Video tips. Be creative. You are limited only by your imagination, but follow a lot of the hints that we've already talked about tonight.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah.
The best tech in the world is going to be useless without a really good, strong story.
Yes, Absolutely. And the best thing that you can do, don't try to shoot from the hip, as it were, when it comes to doing your video. Have a script. Literally have a script where you go through and you have scene one, scene two, scene three, scene four, scene five, and what you want to accomplish with that. Another thing that I use all the time when I was doing the GeoSnippets videos, actually storyboard it out some. Write a little, make a little 2-second drawing of what you want to accomplish in each of those scenes. It helps it make sense while you're out shooting, because you don't shoot it usually in order. You don't usually have it from, here we are going here, and this is doing that, and here we are over here. You have to be able to keep track of what you shoot, otherwise you're going to miss stuff. So have a script when you do it. That is going to save you a lot, and then check it off as you go through it. Another trick, if you're out there and you can have several cameras shooting the same scene at the same time, is awesome, because again, you're not like, where if you're watching our podcast right now, you've been watching us, the screen changes with the people that are talking, but you're still seeing us at the same level each time. If you have a scene where you're doing it from different angles, you can actually cut and slice that and put it into your video as well. That makes things easier to watch as well.
A good example is you're sneaking around an object, and you got the shot where from behind where you're sneaking around the object, and then as you go around the object, you got the other camera picking you up coming around the other side.
Exactly. Yeah, extremely.
You've either got to have several cameras or be prepared to repeat the scene several times.
Right. And that gets difficult.
When you know you're pretty sure you've got them going away and round it, then shift everything around and do several takes of coming back in and back around and out.
Absolutely. A huge thing. Tons. And people go, why are you doing that? Because if you see me in an event or something that I'm going to do a video to, you see me taking pictures of us going down the road. You have me walking down a trail. You've got all the scenery of the cool stuff that's nearby, specific objects that you want to go through. What that's called is B-roll. And what you want to use with B-roll is it's filler in your scene. So if you've got something that says, and now I'm going to be traveling to this spot to go find this particular geocache, you have to show the travel, be it showing you driving down the road or driving up to the spot or anything like that, so that people feel more immersed in what you're doing.
Peter Jackson, Lord of the Rings, and the sweeping over the mountains.
All that stuff. Path. If you've got a drone, baby, go for it, because that's the kind of stuff that you want to add into your video. So
no,
yeah.
I haven't got the drone.
I'm going to eventually. So yeah, that's B-roll is
my
huge.
My cameras suck on my drone, so.
Only drone we have is some bagpipes.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. There you go. That'll drone.
Different kind of drone.
Music or not to have music. If it's been done very well both ways, and I can't tell you whether it's going to work for you or not, I will tell you, if you're doing dialogue, don't have music in the background. That's just from personal experience. Don't have music and you're in the background. But if you're doing transitions, we're driving to whatever, it's a moment that's coming to a crescendo or something like that, have the music in for that. But if you're having people speak at a particular point, either have it very, very low or don't have it at all in cases like that, because that will kill a video. I've been told. Quality voice and sounds from your camera. Again, we did the lapel pins. Voice over commentary. So you get your film all in a nice order. Everything's ready to go. Sometimes, depending on the story and how it works, you need to have somebody take you through the story. And you need a voice commentary to do that. So in other words, you're explaining what somebody sees, because the amount of visual input they're getting may not get the point across. So all I can say is use that with a grain of salt. Sometimes it can be very funny, especially if you do a, you know, what do they call it? Go through the fourth wall where suddenly you're conversing with the person doing the commentary and, you know, going that way. That's usually funny when you go through that. People are listening to the – they listen to the voice as he's doing the commentary, and then suddenly when the character stops and talks with the commentator right there while you're watching, things like that can be very funny when you do things like that. It has to be done right.
Getting ideas for a sort of David Attenborough-style nature documentary.
There you go. See?
See the acacia in their natural habitat.
It's like, shh, we're looking. There's a muggle over here. You know, stuff like that. You just, you can be funny with that. But definitely a voiceover for areas that people may not understand, especially if you're doing a tutorial type of thing. I did voiceovers constantly for tutorials. And it just makes it easier to here's Sarah as she's going over and trying to get to this geocache, but a muggle's in her way. Well, this is what she does. You know, that kind of stuff.
No, I didn't get out the rifle and shoot them, even though I felt like it.
Yep.
But one thing I'd say, I've done a couple of little training videos. I had to do them for the Masters a few years back. If in doubt, simplify, take it out, slow your voice down.
Oh, yeah.
And that will get your message across so much stronger.
Yes.
I have no problems with the slowing the voice down. my voice is naturally slow.
Yeah, but that's the problem, though, and I have to catch myself with this, especially with younger children. Have you ever gone to a play or something that small children are in? They talk like this. They're going to do their part because this is their part because they have to do it fast, and they're going to go like this. It drives people nuts.
Yes.
So when you tell them, when you come to a comma, take a breath. When you come to a period, take a deep breath, and it teaches them to slow down when they're talking because they have to go this way so people can understand what they're saying. So, big difference.
I was having a conference call the other day with a colleague from whose English is not their first language or their second language for that matter, but they were rattling on quicker than I could understand.
Oh, yeah.
With the accent.
Yeah.
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 I've just been known to say, I'm sorry, I just haven't got my ear tuned to your voice yet.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, if you're doing a GIF entry, and good on you, and I think you should, but really be clear. Think about, why do you want to tell this story?
Yes.
What makes it really special? What is it about it that would make others want to watch it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may have an event, but months later, somebody from another country, why would they want to watch it? Why would they want to sit, watch it and listen if it's not in their first language?
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking about, I guess, a bit around sort of if you're applying for a job, you've got to write that letter, cover letter. You've got to submit that CV, that resume. Mm-hmm. What you've got, you spend hours and hours trying to make yours the one that will stand out in a good way amongst the thousands of others to the recruiter that's sitting there trying to decide which candidates to send through to interview. It's that sort of process.
How do you stand out? How do you catch somebody's eye and hang on to it? Keep in mind, most videos that people watch, you've got 30 seconds or so to catch them. And I don't think they realize that as much. So you have to grab them right from the beginning and pull them in to want to watch more. And that's one of the things you really want to do, keep up with them. Make a good point right off the bat and then put them through that story. And like she said, you know, keep it pithy. Keep it to the point and make it get that little bit of wow factor in there as well. That little zinger at the end that makes people go, wow, that was really cool. That's going to give you a good GIF.
Yeah. When they're down to sort of 40 or 50 and they're trying to get it down to the 16 or whatever they show, what is it that they're going to say, hang on, there was these. Now, which one did I remember?
Exactly.
In a good way.
Exactly. Yeah, get that stuff that's going to work. And it's not that difficult. It's that one key point, that one slapstick object, that one bit of information where they went, wow, that was worth seeing that. That's what's going to do it. All right. Good stuff. All right, folks. Wow, good hour flew on this one. Good show. All right, I'd like to thank Chad and Sarah for being here. Thank you so much. And I'd like to thank you fine folks for stopping on by and checking us out at the Geocaching Podcast. And, yeah, we will see you next week. If you've got suggestions that you want to have us include for people for making videos or for gifts, send it to geocachingpodcast@gmail.com or go to our website at geocachingpodcast.com and leave us a message there. We'd greatly appreciate it, and we'll include that in. All right. I think it's time to move on. Excellent show. Let's do this. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production. It is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Chad Courtney, and Sarah T.S. This show is copyright 2017 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.